My dad had a lot of jobs. And one of the jobs he held before I was born is he worked on a riverboat dredger in the Mississippi River. And one of the guys on the crew on this riverboat dredger was on a diet. And the only things you could eat on this diet, you could eat as much of them as you wanted, but the only two things you could eat on the diet were cabbage soup and white rice. And if you can imagine what it's like being on a riverboat dredger with one bathroom and 10 dudes on it, and one guy is eating nothing but cabbage soup.
That sounds unfortunate.
He wasn't invited back on the next run, but he lost weight. And my mom, back when my uncle was about to get married, she went on a diet where you could eat whatever you wanted to eat as long as you ate 7 bananas that day. In addition to
whatever you're eating.
Whatever you were eating. And she lost some weight and she got where she could fit into a dress before my uncle's wedding. And then she gave up the diet.
What are you talking about? Why are we talking about diets?
I think productivity is in a lot of ways a lot like dieting. There's a bunch of different productivity techniques, just like there's a bunch of different diets. All of them work for some people. None of them work for everybody. And none of them work for anybody forever. Hey there, I'm Alex.
And I'm Mo.
We met at MIT, got married, co-founded Boomerang, invented email snoozing, and have spent a lot of time geeking out about productivity.
On Less Busy Lab, we'll share
and argue about
research-backed tips, productivity hacks, and secrets from 15 years of running a small team that does big things.
There are no silver bullets in productivity, but we'll try to help you get more done while feeling less busy. Let's go!
There's actually a study called Pounds Study, appropriately named. And they try out 6 different low-carb versus low-fat versus low-protein, high-protein across hundreds of people over 2 years. And what they found was each type of diet, it doesn't matter what type it is, has a very high variability in effectiveness across people. So for each diet, some people lost 45 pounds and some people gained 20 pounds. And it doesn't matter what the diet is exactly, they all lost almost the same amount of weight over time. But for the effectiveness for each individual, it's really very highly variable.
So some people would, the two people would eat exactly the same diet. Some people would lose a bunch of
40 pounds and some
gain
20.
Some would gain some weight.
There was actually even more fascinating, a later, more detailed study on identical twins being given the same nutrition, same meals, and they are responding differently.
Even though they've got the same genetics.
Exactly.
Huh.
So I think your thesis that, you know, each diet can work for some people and there is no single diet that works for every single person on earth is validated, at least from these studies. What about productivity? I don't think there is a large-scale, multivariate, 2-year studies on which productivity system works for what kind of people.
Yeah, and I think the reason that I brought up these diets, aside from that I like that they're funny, I think when we look at a productivity technique and we try it, and it works for a little while, it's kind of like the banana diet for my mom. We look at it and we say, oh, well, 3 months later, it's not working for me anymore. It was a failure. And we keep looking for what is the one productivity tool or framework or system that's going to work for everybody in every context and forever.
The other part is we are blaming ourselves that, oh, this system that everybody's raving about, waking up at 5 a.m. and have this magical 1-hour morning routine.
Yeah.
But I can't do it. I am not a morning person. So does it mean I'm a failure? Because all these successful productivity gurus are going out there saying, if you just get this magical 5 a.m. morning routine, all your productivity problems will be solved. And I'm thinking that would just never work for me. And it never does. Even try as I might, it just fails.
I did the morning routine for about a month. And I did feel pretty good.
Uh-huh.
But I think I was building up a huge sleep debt because I was going to bed, but I couldn't sleep. Like, it was not a sustainable thing. But I don't think it failed. I felt good for a month.
I mean, it's the same thing with bullet journal for me, right? I mentioned it in a previous episode. I try and it worked for, it was even longer than a month. I had it probably 18 months or even more. And it stopped working at some point. Doesn't mean I failed. And or does it mean that, hey, it no longer, this technique or that this system no longer serves me and my current circumstances?
I had a lot of resistance to even doing this podcast.
Yes, I know.
I have pages and pages of half-written posts about productivity techniques and thoughts over the years. The big thing in tech circles for a while was imposter syndrome. And I've never really felt that exactly, but I felt like I'm not qualified to talk about anything or teach anybody anything because I haven't found the one weird trick that works for everybody in every circumstance.
I don't think I had that. Like, for me, it has always been about, it's not this one magical trick. It's about a toolbox. If I have a toolbox of different approaches, right? We talk about in the last episode about how to get ourselves to do things that we don't want to do. And there are all kinds of different small to large tricks that you can try. For me, the reluctance about not going out and sharing as much is because I felt like it wouldn't be applicable to anybody else and that what worked for me is just so uniquely me. And then I realized maybe the entire set of my toolbox may not work for somebody else 100%, but some parts of my toolbox can work. And some parts of your toolbox might work for somebody, and then they can assemble their own toolbox from different things that we have tried. That wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, I think one nice thing about having the perspective of being in my 40s is day by day, I feel like I'm not getting stuff done. And I feel like I'm not accomplishing enough. I feel like I'm not making enough progress, and I need to figure out a better system to be more productive.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm 40 and I look back, well, I've got 2 degrees from MIT. We've got a successful company. We've got 2 kids. They're not dead yet.
Yeah, 2 happy kids. And
looking back at every single moment along the way, there are very few moments where I felt like I had it all together and was really being productive. But there's a big pile of work at the end of it, and it's good work.
I think for me, I was always waiting for, like, there will be an arrival moment, right?
Yeah,
like, at
absolutely.
Some point in my life, they'll be like, I have made it. I have arrived. I have solved all my productivity problems.
You started a podcast.
I don't think that equates to having made it. But, like, I thought there would be this ta-da moment of all the spotlight shining and be like, oh, you solve all your productivity problem and you have this magical steady state where you have solved everything. And I realized after waiting for that for, I guess, since, let's say, when we became adult, 20 years of being a professional, I'm like, it's never going to come. Because
yeah.
Every time I felt like I solve my problems, there are new things that change. There are new things that pop up. There are new problems. And I think we are constantly just changing out old problems that we have solved with new problems that come up.
Yeah. And I have a hard time still making peace with it feeling more like a river that's always bringing new stuff down than like trying to drain a lake.
Yeah, I think it's the journey and how you give yourself grace that like you're not going to have this perfect solution. And whatever works for you right now, as long as it's working and you're getting enough work done, that's okay.
Yeah. And I think it applies to a lot of goals and plans and things. I'm a big New Year's resolution person. Every single year, I have at least one New Year's resolution, and then I do it again on my birthday. And the longest one I had a 4-month thing where I woke up every morning and I did a 7-minute workout.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stopped. And it's the same feeling overall. I felt like I had failed. But when I look back at it, Well, I go back and I look at my Apple Watch data, and that was the time where my heart was doing the best it's ever done. So it wasn't a failure. It was 4 months of doing better than I had done before.
Yeah, I think the New Year resolution, and they have a very technical term for it called fresh start effect, and you can make it for anything: New Year, birthday, I turn 30, new
coming
job,
back from a trip.
Yeah, I have a new baby. All of those are considered fresh start, a chance for you to change something. And the statistic that you look at is, you can look at it from the bright side or the dark side. The bright side is,
you know, the dark side. You're an anti-New Year's resolution person. I get to do the bright side.
Over 70% of the people have failed, or not just failed, like over 70% of the people have given up on the New Year resolution by the, I believe, second Monday.
Yeah, it's like the second Monday after.
Yeah.
But that means that 30% of people on an absolutely arbitrary day, 1-1 of the year, which could, you know, it's just another day. The sun comes up in the morning, magically change their lives for a period of longer than 3 weeks.
I feel like New Year resolution, to be considered successful completely, you need to have made it to the whole year.
No.
No.
That's the whole point of the episode.
Okay, fine. I agree that you try, it works. It works for a certain amount of time. That's okay. We can get into this debate longer in a different episode about resolution versus habits. I am in the camp of don't make resolution, build habits, right? That's a different thing. But even habits, they can fall out, and sometimes not because give up or you fail, because circumstances around you that you cannot control are changing.
Yeah, I've definitely had the morning routine that I was doing so well at blew up because our youngest son started in a different preschool and the drive got more complicated.
Yep. And then that same complicated drive for you was a morning walk for me built in, where I drop him off, walk home. And then now I'm like, I have 20 minutes of peace and quiet meditative walk in the morning built in. And I go straight into doing yoga. And then once that commute changed, I am a lot less regular with getting to my yoga practice before work starts.
And that change affects not just personal life, but work life too. Every time you change jobs, every time you change roles, every time you get moved to a different office building.
You change projects and you have different teammates and they use a different project management tool.
Yeah. Or the project nature of the project itself is different. Maybe you're on a tighter deadline and you have to change the way you work.
I think the main thing is to go back to, you know, change is constant, which is one of the first tenets of Buddhism. The second one is you don't control everything. And when something changes and disrupts the workflow that was working for you, the important thing to remind yourself is don't try to claw your way back to the way it used to work. And actually be mindful of things that used to work are now in different circumstances, and how do I adapt and adjust to it, right? One example I want to give is somebody on my team. He's a stellar individual contributor, right? Responsible for all his work, was getting everything done.
Yeah.
And getting the top rating. Then we started to give him higher scope, higher level of responsibility. Then now he's responsible for more than what he's accomplishing himself. He's now more interdependent with other people. And he didn't really adjust to using a different task manager or, you know, tracking things. And things may start to slip. So my feedback for him was like, hey, things have changed for you. Can you actually consider implementing a different workflow for tracking what you're responsible for? And we are implementing it this week. And it's really important to be mindful of, hey, things change. What worked for me as an individual contributor no longer work as a manager or a team lead. Let's adapt.
Yeah, absolutely. There were so many things pre-pandemic. That worked. Yes, it worked so well. We had this balcony and you could go up it and you'd stand there and you'd watch the commuter train go by. And having that train to watch was sometimes just the thing that my brain needed to reset itself. And, you know, a train video on YouTube is not quite the same thing. I had to find it. I kept trying to see, okay, cool, if I could just go back and get these trains again, I'll have this right in my brain. And it's just not the same. And now I have to drive 20 minutes to get to a train. And by the time I've driven the 20 minutes there and back, my brain's all scattered again. It's just had to find a different approach.
When those changes happen, it's really important to be aware of what's happening and what's changing and how it's affecting your productivity. But then, you know, life normally has random turbulence, right? You get sick, or somebody in your family is in a hospital, or there are situations that happen short term and you may have random dips in the productivity. And that's kind of like you need to adjust and figure out. But if it's not a short term change, something is more persistent change, then you really need to pay attention. Like, okay, this is now my fourth week of low or no productivity. What do I need to do? What do I need to try out, and what's not working? That self-reflection and awareness is a major piece for following this advice, right? If you don't know it's not working, how are you going to change it?
So what does it feel like? And I've never been good at this. Most of my days are spent in a somewhat existential dread of some task or another, and then some excitement about something else that's not the thing I'm supposed to be working on. And there's always that tension. How do you identify early on, hey, something's not working right now? And it may not be as dramatic as I have a new job or I have a new role. It's just been something subtle that
smaller
I couldn't even
shifts,
really place.
Yeah. For me, I think it's really like when something doesn't work and when I needed to start implementing that flexible time blocking, right? The reason that I realized is in my weekly reviews, like I do that Friday, did I get enough done for this week review?
Okay.
I was getting like 3 to 4 weeks, I'm like, huh, I can see that I'm not making progress on these strategic things that I promised the company that we are going to do. And 1 or 2 weeks, I don't freak out, right? Like that just happened.
Yeah.
But by the time this is the fourth week of me making no progress on these goals, I start to notice that's a red flag for me to really dig deep. And then, you know, I work with my coach and be like, hey, these are the things that I said is really important for the company and for me to make progress on. And then I haven't done anything about it for a month.
So it wasn't so much a monitoring your feelings, it was monitoring the work output.
Outcome, yeah.
Okay.
And I think, you know, accountability that we're talking about, right? Like having a coach to talk about this and making a plan and moving consciously and saying, hey, whatever I was doing, it's not working anymore. I need a different plan.
So to some extent, you know, you don't have a boss.
I don't. And that's kind of tough.
So you're using your coach in the role of a boss. But what do you do if you don't have a supportive boss and you can't just be like, hey, I didn't get anything done the last 2 weeks because you might get fired?
I think if you have any kind of boss who wants you to succeed, I think it's more important to be honest about, one, I didn't get much done, and two, working with them to really figure out why. But, you know, you may have a boss who's too busy and said, that's not my problem. Go figure it out yourself. And I think that's a very fair answer too, right? Like, I'm sure as a boss myself, I may have said those exact words.
Definitely did.
At some point, you are a professional. You are paid to do this responsibility and deliver this work. So you need to know I am no longer doing the work that I need to do, and finding a supportive source. It doesn't have to be your boss. It could be a friend, right? It could be your spouse. It could be anybody that can help you. And sometimes it's just somebody listening to you talking about, well, I can't get this started because of X, Y, and Z. And as you're talking, you realize, oh, this project management tool changed and it completely doesn't work with how my brain works. And you get the insight, but you have to engage with it. You have to dig deeper with it.
I like the weekly review idea. Our third grader, they've had a ton of turmoil at their school. Like they've changed teachers like 4 different times. So there've been 4 different systems. And they finally settled on one at the second half of this year, where every week they write out a work plan for what they're going to do. It's a Montessori school, so the teachers don't necessarily dictate exactly what the work is going to be. The kids write down what the expectations are for the week. And then at the end of the week, they report back and look at the work plan and say, here's what I accomplished.
I didn't realize he's doing exactly what I do.
He is. He absolutely is. And right. He came back the first couple of weeks, you know, okay. And then he had a week where his write-up of how did I do this week is, I really didn't get very much done, and I hope I'll do better next week. And then things have gotten better. And I don't think he's had another week where he's written out, I didn't do anything this week since that time. And he's even gotten a couple of weeks where he got everything turned in. And I think that weekly focus is really working for him.
Yeah, I love the weekly framework because I think there are people who are very tightly scheduled and have like daily goals and they hit daily goals. That doesn't give you that like, I didn't sleep enough. At least I'm an occasional insomniac. So for me, some days are just lower productivity than others. And be able to give yourself the grace to round it out for the week.
So the granularity, if it's daily, it's too small. If it's monthly, it's too big. You need like that weekly cadence.
Cadence, yeah. But at least that's for me. There are people who really need that like daily immediate goals. Oh, it's 4 o'clock and I need to get these two things done for the day, which I do have for myself too, right? I have my daily stand up of what I'm going to do, and it's 3:30 is rolling around and I'm like, hey, looking at the list, I have these two. Get myself to it. I do. It's the other parts of like a little bit more fudgeable goals are the harder part for weekly.
So what other cadence do you do? Just daily and weekly?
Daily and weekly. And then I have the quarterly planning that I have to start thinking about. And then I used to do for each department monthly review, but we stopped that.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of, yeah. I think it depends on, you know, structure of the company and the team. And so for us, it's too small and we work pretty involved with each of the teams. So I don't really need that monthly review. A lot of the one-on-ones that I have with people, we actually look through our quarterly goals too.
And see if you're tracking on those.
Yeah. Or what we're missing. You know, it's kind of crazy how much seeing the goals written down somewhere and like just looking at it, right? Like just making sure you look at it either daily or weekly or quarterly. Sometimes we just forget to look at the to-do list during the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also nice to sometimes look back and say, regardless of how you're feeling, look back and say, wow, there's a lot of stuff that got done this year.
Right. And there are people who love this ta-da list. You know, they don't call it to-do list. They call it ta-da list. And it's a great way to celebrate what you got done and have a log of look at all the body of work, right? That's the important part. If you have the toolbox to get yourself and stuck on the things that you get stuck at consistently, over time, you will have a whole body of work that you can be proud of.
And I think that toolbox is really the point, is understanding that there's not a system.
Yep.
And for some people, I guess that's the thing. Everybody's different.
Yes.
And everybody, even within themselves, is different from year to year, depending on external circumstances and what's going on.
Also, 40-year-old me is different from 25-year-old me, right?
Yeah.
We are different. Our brains are still developing and changing, and neural pathways are being modified as we grow.
I have a lot less energy and I have a lot more perspective.
What about patience? I think you still have not that much patience.
Thanks. But I think developing a toolbox and saying, these are some techniques that can situationally work for me, and being able to try them and be with them and see how it affects what's going on is maybe the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do here with this podcast, is help people do that.
Yeah, I think it's really keep driving over and over that there is no silver bullet.
Yeah, there's no one system that's going to work for you and or work for everybody or even work for you in all circumstances.
And the ability to pay attention and adapt and change as thing goes comes with self-awareness and self-reflection.
And also realizing that something that doesn't work forever but works for a while is a success.
Yes, celebrate it.
Yeah. There have been months when I've gone back and looked and I said, what on earth did I do this whole month? And then there have been some other months where there was a lot. And those months are good.
Yeah, I think stop waiting for this magical moment to have arrived where you have everything figured out and your life will be in order. It's a journey that you keep going and changing and tweaking. And I think there's one thing that we put in our guiding principle for the company, right? Is better is good.
I think that came from the Obama administration.
Yes, he was having problems with young staffers who were not happy that the Affordable Care Act was not perfect. And he said, hey, is this better? Better than what we have? Yes. Okay, better is good. Let's go get this done.
Sometimes it's very hard to remember that better is good. And if you keep moving in that direction, things tend to get better and better and better.
There's the whole, you know, Japanese Kaizen 1% better. I'm not sure I'm getting it right, but I think that's what it is.
I don't know this one, so I can't check you.
Circle back on where we started, right? The change at constant, that's the part that we wanted to talk about. And that you don't control everything. Those are the two pieces of the three tenets of Buddhism. And the funny part is the third part is called suffering, right? So there's always suffering. And the explanation is, if you don't accept that change is constant and you don't control everything, and you are trying to control the change to stop, that's when you actually compound your own suffering. So to be productive, or I guess at least to be at peace with your own level of productivity, you got to think like a Buddhist.
Well, be at peace, but keep getting better.
Yes.
So what's our tip for the week?
I think to build a toolbox for yourself and kind of keep a collection of, when I'm in this situation, these type of techniques and tricks and tools work for me. And constantly making sure that you're reaching out to pick up the right tool from your toolbox.
And maybe to make peace with the idea that, okay, well, this is a Band-Aid. But if you have enough Band-Aids for long enough, you can do what you need to do, even though your hand is still sore. I don't know.
No, I think the main goal for everybody is build that set of tips and tricks and system ready in your toolbox and know what they are.
And to pay enough attention to when your productivity starts to lag and maybe incorporate one of them. And to be okay saying, well, this one didn't work this time. Let's reach for another tool.
Yes. And if people are willing to share their set of tools in their toolbox, we would love to hear them. That would be amazing.
Questions@lessbusylabs.com.
Yep.
We'd love to hear especially about tools that used to be in your toolbox but have fallen out.
Or a new tool that's currently working for you. Either way. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Less Busy Lab. If you haven't already, please...
Can I say it? I want to say it.
Okay, fine.
Smash that subscribe button!
Are you happy now?
So happy.
Please subscribe to our podcast to get all our future episodes. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Find me on LinkedIn for more behind-the-scenes content and updates.
We'll put the links to all the research papers, tools, and templates mentioned in the episode in the show notes.
We'll also be adding a listener questions segment in the future episodes. So if you have any productivity-related questions, send us an email at questions@lessbusylab.com.
Our sponsors this week are the same as they are every week, GQs and Boomerang. Check them out.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you're already feeling less busy and more productive.